ISIS Audiobooks presents an unabridged recording of The Amazing Morris and His Educated Rodents, written by Terry Pratchett, read by Stephen Briggs. Chapter 1. One day, when he was naughty, Mr. Bunsey looked over the hedge into Farmer Fred's field and saw it was full of fresh green lettuces. Mr. Bunsey, however, was not full of lettuces. This did not seem fair. From Mr. Bunsey Has an Adventure. Rats. They chased the dogs and bit the cats. But there was more to it than that. As the Amazing Morris said, it was just a story about people and rats. And the difficult part of it was deciding who the people were and who were the rats. But Melissa Grimm said it was a story about stories. It began, part of it began, on the mail coach that came over the mountains from the distant cities of the plain. This was the part of the journey that the driver didn't like. The way wound through forests and around mountains on crumbling roads. There were deep shadows between the trees. Sometimes he thought things were following the coach, keeping just out of sight. It gave him the willies. And on this journey, the really big willie was that he could hear voices. He was sure of it. They were coming from behind him, from the top of the coach, and there was nothing there but the big oilcloth mail sacks and the young man's luggage. There was certainly nothing big enough for a person to hide inside, but occasionally he was sure he heard squeaky voices whispering. There was only one passenger at this point. He was a fair-haired young man, sitting all by himself inside the rocking coach and reading a book. He was reading slowly and aloud, and moving his finger over the words.
"Aberwald," he read aloud.
"That's Uberwald," said a small, squeaky but very clear voice. "The dots make it a sort of long oo sound, but you're doing well."
"Uberwald?"
"There's such a thing as too much pronunciation, kid," said another voice, which sounded half asleep. "But you know the best thing about Uberwald? It's a long, long way from Stolat. It's a long way from Pseudopolis. It's a long way from anywhere where the head of the watch says he'll have us boiled alive if he ever catches us. And it's not very modern. Bad roads. Lots of mountains in the way. People don't move about much up here, so news doesn't travel very fast, see? And they probably don't have policemen. Kid, we can make a fortune here."
"Morris,"
said the boy carefully.
"Yes, kid?"
"You don't think what we're doing is, you know, dishonest, do you?"
There was a pause before the voice said,
"How do you mean, dishonest?"
"Well, we take their money, Morris."
The coach rocked and bounced over a pothole.
"All right," said the unseen Morris, "but what you've got to ask yourself is, who do we take the money from, actually?"
"Well, it's generally the mayor or the city council or someone like that."
"Right, and that means it's..."
"What?"
"I've told you this bit before." "It is government money, kid," said Morris patiently. "Say it. Government money."
"Government money,"
said the boy obediently.
"Right. And what do governments do with money?"
They
play soldiers," said Morris. "They have wars. In fact, we probably stopped a lot of wars by taking the money and putting it where it can't do any harm. They'd put up statues to us if they'd thought about it."
"Some of those towns looked pretty poor, Morris," said the kid doubtfully.
"Hey, just the kind of places that don't need wars, then."
"Dangerous Beans says it's..."
The boy concentrated, and his lips moved before he said the word, as if he was trying out the pronunciation to himself.
It's unethical." "That's right, Morris,"
said the squeaky voice. "Dangerous Beans says we shouldn't live by trickery."
"Listen, Peaches, trickery is what humans are all about," said the voice of Morris. "They're so keen on tricking one another all the time that they elect governments to do it for them. We give them value for money. They get a horrible plague of rats. They pay a rat piper. The rats all follow the kid out of town, hoppity-skip. End of plague. Everyone's happy that no one's whittling in the flour anymore. The government gets re-elected by a grateful population. General celebration all round. Money well spent, in my opinion."
"But there's only a plague because we make them think there is," said the voice of Peaches.
"Well, my dear, another thing all those little governments spend their money on is rat catchers, see? I don't know why I bother with a lot of you. I really don't."
"Yes, but we..."
They realized that the coach had stopped. Outside, in the rain, there was the jingle of harness. Then the coach rocked a little, and there was a sound of running feet. A voice from out of the darkness said,
"Are there any wizards in there?"
The occupants looked at one another in puzzlement.
"No,"
said the kid, the kind of no that means, "Why are you asking?"
"How about any witches?" said the voice.
"No, no witches," said the kid.
"Right. Are there any heavily armed trolls employed by the mail coach company in there?"
"I doubt it," said Morris.
There was a moment's pause, filled with the sound of the rain.
"Okay. How about werewolves?"
said the voice eventually. The speaker sounded as though he was working through a list.
"What do they look like?" said the kid.
"Oh, well, they look perfectly normal right up to the point where they grow all, like, hair and teeth and giant paws and leap through the window at you," said the voice.
"We've all got hair and teeth," said the kid. "Is that any help?"
"So you are werewolves, then?"
"No."
"Fine, fine."
There was another pause filled with rain.
"Okay, vampires," said the voice. "It's a wet night. You wouldn't want to be flying in weather like this. Any vampires in there?"
"No," said the kid. "We're all perfectly harmless."
"Oh, boy," muttered Morris, and crawled under the seat.
"That's a relief," said the voice. "You can't be too careful these days. There's a lot of funny people about."
A crossbow was pushed through the window, and the voice said,
"Your money and your life. It's a two-for-one deal, see?"
"The money's in the case on the roof,"
said Morris's voice from floor level. The highwayman looked around the dark interior of the coach.
"Who said that?"
he said.
Me," said the boy.
"I didn't see your lips move, kid."
The money is on the roof, in the case, but if I was you, I wouldn't..."
"Huh, I just expect you wouldn't,"
said the highwayman. His masked face disappeared from the window. The boy picked up the pipe that was lying on the seat beside him. It was the type still known as a penny whistle, although no one could remember when they'd ever cost only a penny.
"Play robbery with violence, kid," said Morris quietly.
"Couldn't we just give him money?"
said the voice of Peaches. It was a little voice.
"Money is for people to give us," said Morris sternly.
Above them, they heard the scrape of the case on the roof of the coach as the highwayman dragged it down. The boy obediently picked up the flute and played a few notes. Now there were a number of sounds. There was a creak, a thud, a sort of scuffling noise, and then a very short scream. When there was silence, Morris climbed back onto the seat and poked his head out of the coach into the dark and rainy night.
"Good man," he said. "Sensible. The more you struggle, the harder they bite. Probably not broken skin yet. Good. Come forward a bit so I can see you. But carefully, eh? We don't want anyone to panic, do we?"
The highwayman reappeared in the light of the coach lamps. He was walking very slowly and carefully, with his legs spread wide apart. And he was quietly whimpering.
"Ah, there you are," said Morris cheerfully. "Went straight up your trouser legs, did they? Typical rat trick. Just nod, because we don't want to set him off. No telling where it might end."
The highwayman nodded very slowly. Then his eyes narrowed.
"You're a cat,"
he mumbled. Then his eyes crossed and he gasped.
"Did I say talk?" said Morris. "I don't think I said talk, did I? Did the coachman run away, or did you kill him?"
The man's face went blank.
"Ah, a quick learner. I like that in a highwayman," said Morris. "You can answer that question."
"Ran away," said the highwayman hoarsely.
Morris stuck his head back inside the coach.
"Why do you think?" he said. "Coach, 4 horses, probably some valuables in the mailbags, could be, $1,000 or more. The kid could drive it, worth a try."
"That's stealing, Morris," said Peaches.
She was sitting on the seat beside the kid. She was a rat.
"Not stealing as such," said Morris. "More finding. The driver's run away, so it's like salvage. Hey, that's right, we could turn it in for the reward. That's much better. Legal, too, shall we?"
"People would ask too many questions," said Peaches.
"If we just leave it, someone yelp will steal it," wailed Morris. "Some thief will take it away. Much better if we take it, eh? We're not thieves."
"We will leave it, Morris," said Peaches.
"In that case, let's steal the highwayman's horse," said Morris, as if the night wouldn't be properly finished unless they stole something. "Stealing from a thief isn't stealing, because it cancels out."
"We can't stay here all night," said the kid to Peaches. "He's got a point."
"That's right,"
said the highwayman urgently.
"You can't stay here all night."
"That's right," said a chorus of voices from his trousers. "We can't stay here all night."
Morris sighed and stuck his head out the window again.
"Okay," he said. "This is what we're going to do. You're going to stand very still, looking straight in front of you, and you won't try any tricks, because if you do, I've only got to say the word."
"Don't say the word,"
said the highwayman, even more urgently.
"Right," said Morris. "And we'll take your horse as punishment, and you can have the coach, because that'll be stealing, and only thieves are allowed to steal. Fair enough?"
"Anything you say,"
said the highwayman. And then he thought about this and added hurriedly,
"But please don't say anything."
He kept staring straight ahead. He saw the boy and the cat get out of the coach. He heard various sounds behind him as they took his horse, and he thought about his sword. All right, he was going to get a whole mail coach out of this deal, but there was such a thing as professional pride.
"All right," said the voice of the cat after a while. "We're all going to leave now, and you've got to promise not to move until we're gone. Promise?"
"You have my word as a thief,"
said the highwayman, slowly lowering a hand to his sword.
"Right, we certainly trust you," said the voice of the cat.
The man felt his trousers lighten as the rats poured out and scampered away, and he heard the jingle of harness. He waited a moment, then spun around, drew his sword and ran forward. Slightly forward, in any case. He wouldn't have hit the ground so hard if someone hadn't tied his bootlaces together. They said he was amazing. The amazing Morris, they said. He'd never meant to be amazing. It had just happened. He'd realised something was odd that day, just after lunch, when he'd looked into a reflection in the puddle and thought, "That's me." He'd never been aware of himself before. Of course, it was hard to remember how he'd thought before he became amazing. It seemed to him that his mind had been just a kind of soup. And then there had been the rats that lived under the rubbish heap in one corner of his territory. He'd realised there was something educated about the rats when he jumped on one and it had said, "Can we talk about this?" And part of his amazing new brain had told him you couldn't eat someone who could talk. At least, not until you'd heard what they'd got to say. The rat had been Peaches. She wasn't like other rats, nor were dangerous beans. Donut enter, dark tan, ham and pork, big savings, toxie, and all the rest of them. But then, Morris wasn't like other cats anymore. Other cats were, suddenly, stupid. Morris started to hang around with the rats instead. They were someone to talk to. He got on fine so long as he remembered not to eat anyone they knew. The rats spent a lot of time worrying about why they were suddenly so clever. Morris considered that this was a waste of time. Stuff happened. But the rats went on and on about whether it was something on the rubbish heap that they'd eaten, and even Morris could see that that wouldn't explain how he'd got changed, because he'd never eaten rubbish. and he certainly wouldn't eat any rubbish off that heap, seeing as where it came from. He considered that the rats were, quite frankly, dumb. Clever, okay, but dumb. Morris had lived on the streets for 4 years and barely had any ears left and scars all over his nose, and he was smart. He swaggered so much when he walked that if he didn't slow down, he flipped himself over. When he fluffed out his tail, people had to step around it. He reckoned you had to be smart to live for 4 years on these streets, especially with all the dog gangs and freelance furriers. One wrong move, and you were lunch and a pair of gloves. Yes, you had to be smart. You also had to be rich. This took some explaining to the rats, but Morris had roamed the city and learned how things worked, and money, he said, was the key to everything. And then one day he'd seen the stupid-looking kid playing the flute with his cap in front of him for pennies, and he'd had an idea. An amazing idea. It just turned up, bang, all at once. Rats, flute, stupid-looking kid. And he'd said, "Hey, stupid-looking kid, how would you like to make your fortune, kid? I'm down here." Dawn was breaking when the highwayman's horse came out of the forests, over a pass, and was reined to a halt in a convenient wood. The river valley stretched out below, with a town hunched up against the cliffs. Morris clambered out of the saddlebag and stretched. The stupid-looking kid helped the rats out of the other bag. They'd spent the journey hunched up on the money, although they were too polite to say that this was because no one wanted to sleep in the same bag as the cat. "What's the name of the town, kid?" he said, sitting on a rock and looking down at the town. Behind them, the rats were counting the money again, stacking it in piles beside its leather bag. They did this every day. Even though he had no pockets, there was something about Morris that made everyone want to check their change as often as possible.
"It's called Bad Blintz," said the kid, referring to the guidebook.
Should we be going there if it's bad?" said Peaches, looking up from the counting.
"Ha! It's not called bad because it's bad," said Morris. "That's foreign language for bath, see?"
"So it's really called Bath Blintz," said Donut Enter.
Nah, they call it bath because..."
The amazing Morris hesitated, but only for a moment.
"Because they got a bath, see? Very backward place, this. Not many baths around. But they've got one, and they're very proud of it, so they want everyone to know. You probably have to buy tickets even to have a look at it."
"Is that true, Morris?"
said Dangerous Beans. He asked the question quite politely, but it was clear that what he was really saying was, "I don't think that is true, Morris." Ah, yes. Dangerous Beans. Dangerous Beans was difficult to deal with. Really, he shouldn't be. Back in the old days, Morris thought, he wouldn't even have eaten a rat so small and pale and generally ill-looking. Morris stared down at the little albino rat with its snow-white fur and pinky eyes. Dangerous Beans did not stare back because he was too short-sighted. Of course, being nearly blind was not too much of a drawback to a species that spent most of its time in the darkness and had a sense of smell that was, as far as Morris could understand it, almost as good as sight and sound and speech all put together. For example, the rat always turned to face Morris and looked directly at him when he spoke. It was uncanny. Morris had known a blind cat that walked into doors a lot, but Dangerous Beans never did that. Dangerous Beans wasn't the head rat. That was Hammond Pork's job. Hammond Pork was big and fierce and a bit scabby, and he didn't much like having a new-fangled brain, and he certainly didn't like talking to a cat. He'd been quite old when the rats had changed, as they called it, and he'd said he was too old to change. He left talking to Morris to Dangerous Beans, who'd been born just after the change. And that little rat was clever. Incredibly clever. Too clever. Morris needed all his tricks when he was dealing with Dangerous Beans.
"It's amazing, the stuff I know," said Morris, blinking slowly at him. "Anyway, it's a nice-looking town. Looks rich to me. Now what we'll do is..."
Morris hated that sound. If there was a sound worse than Dangerous Beans asking one of his odd little questions, it was Peaches clearing her throat. It meant she was going to say something, very quietly, which was going to upset him.
"Yes,"
he said sharply.
"Do we really need to keep on doing this?" she said.
"Well, of course, no," said Morris. "I don't have to be here at all. I'm a cat, right? A cat with my talents? Ha! I could have got myself a really cushy job with a conjurer, or a ventriloquist, maybe. There is no end to the things I could be doing, right? Because people like cats. But owing to being incredibly, you know, stupid and kind-hearted, I decided to help a bunch of rodents who are, let's be frank here, not exactly number one favourites with humans. Now, some of you," and here he cast a yellow eye towards Dangerous Beans, "have some idea of going to some island somewhere and starting up a kind of rat civilization of your very own, which I think is very, you know, admirable. But for that you need... what did I tell you that you need?" "Money, Morris," said Dangerous Beans, "but..." "Money, that's right. 'Cause what can you get with money?" He looked around the rats. "It begins with a B," he prompted. "Boats, Morris, but... and then there's all the tools you'll need, and food, of course."
"There's coconuts,"
said the stupid-looking kid, who was polishing his flute. "Oh, did someone speak?" said Morris. "What do you know about it, kid?"
"You get coconuts," said the kid, "on desert islands. A man selling them told me."
"How?" said Morris. He wasn't too sure about coconuts.
"I don't know. You just get them."
"Oh, I suppose they grow on trees, do they?" said Morris sarcastically. "Sheesh! I just don't know what you lot would do without—" "Anyone?" he glared at the group. "Begins with an M?"
"You, Morris," said Dangerous Beans.
"But you see, what we think is really—"
"Yes," said Morris.
"Ahem," said Peaches. Morris groaned. "What Dangerous Beans means," said the female rat, "is that all this stealing grains and cheese and gnawing holes in walls is, well," she looked up into Morris's yellow eyes, "is not morally right."
"But it's what rats do," said Morris.
"But we feel we shouldn't," said Dangerous Beans. "We should be making our own way in the world."
"Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear," said Morris, shaking his head. "Hole for the island, eh? The kingdom of the rats. Not that I'm laughing at your dream," he added hastily. "Everyone needs their little dreams."
Morris truly believed that, too. If he knew what it was that people really, really wanted, you very nearly controlled them. Sometimes he wondered what the stupid-looking kid really, really wanted. Nothing, as far as Morris could tell, but to be allowed to play his flute and be left alone. But, well, it was like that thing with the coconuts. Every so often the kid would come out with something that suggested he'd been listening all along. People like that are hard to steer. But cats are good at steering people. A meow here, a purr there, a little gentle pressure with a claw. And Morris had never had to think about it before. Cats didn't have to think. They just had to know what they wanted. Humans had to do the thinking. That's what they were for. Morris thought about the good old days before his brain had started whizzing like a firework. He'd turn up at the door of the university kitchens and look sweet, and then the cooks would try to work out what he wanted. It was amazing. They'd say things like, "Does you want a bowl of milk, den? Does you want a biscuit? Does you want these nice scraps, den?" And all Morris would have to do was wait patiently until they got to a sound he recognised, like turkey legs or minced lamb. But he was sure he'd never eaten anything magical. There was no such thing as enchanted chicken giblets, were there? It was the rats who'd eaten the magical stuff. The dump they called home, and also called lunch, was round the back of the university. And it was a university for wizards, after all. The old Morris hadn't paid much attention to people who weren't holding bowls, but he was aware that the big men in pointy hats made strange things happen. And now he knew what happened to the stuff they used, too. It got tossed over the wall when they'd finished with it. All the old worn-out spell books and the stubs of the dribbly candles and the remains of the green bubbly stuff in the cauldrons all ended up on the big dump. along with the tin cans and old boxes, and the kitchen waste. Oh, the wizards had put up signs saying dangerous and toxic, but the rats hadn't been able to read in those days, and they liked Lens. Morris had never eaten anything off the dump. A good motto in life, he'd reckoned, was "Don't eat anything that glows." But he'd become intelligent too, at about the same time as the rats. It was a mystery. Since then, he'd done what cats always did. He steered people. Now some of the rats counted as people too, of course. But people were people, even if they had four legs and had called themselves names like Dangerous Beans, which is the kind of name you give yourself if you learn to read before you understood what all the words actually meant, and reading the warning notices and the labels on the old rusty cans gave you names you liked the sound of. The trouble with thinking was that once you started, you went on doing it. And as far as Morris was concerned, the rats were thinking a good deal too much. It was Peaches who was the worst. Morris's usual trick of just talking fast until people got confused didn't work on her at all.
"Ahem," she began. "We think that this should be the last time."
Morris stared. The other rats backed away slightly, but Peaches just stared back.
"This must be the very last time we do the silly plague of rats trick," said Peaches, "and that's final."
"And what does Ham and Pork think about this?" said Morris.
He turned to the head rat, who had been watching them. It was always a good idea appealing to Ham and Pork when Peaches was giving trouble, because he didn't like her very much.
"What do you mean, think?" said Ham and Pork.
I think we should stop doing this trick," said Peaches, dipping her head nervously.
"Oh, you think too, do you?" said Ham and Pork. "Everyone's thinking these days. I think there's a good deal too much of this thinking, that's what I think. We never thought about thinking when I were a lad. We'd never get anything done if we thought first."
He gave Morris a glare too. Ham and Pork didn't like Morris. He didn't like most things that had happened since the change. In fact, Morris wondered how long Ham and Pork was going to last as leader. He didn't like thinking. He belonged to the days when a rat leader just had to be big and stroppy. The world was moving far too fast for him now, which made him angry. He wasn't so much leading now as being pushed.
"Dangerous Beans, sir, believes that we should be thinking of settling down, sir," said Peaches.
Morris scowled. Ham and Pork wouldn't listen to Peaches, and she knew it. But Dangerous Beans was the nearest thing the rats had to a wizard, and even big rats listened to him.
"I thought we were going to get on a boat and find an island somewhere," said Ham and Pork. "Very ratty places, boats," he added approvingly.
Then he went on, with a slightly nervous and slightly annoyed look at Dangerous Beans,
"And people tell me that we need this money stuff, because now we can do all this thinking, we've got to be
"Ethical, sir," said Dangerous Beans.
"Which sounds unratty to me. Not that my opinion counts for anything, it seems," said Ham and Pork.
"We've got enough money, sir," said Peaches. "We've already got a lot of money. We have got a lot of money, haven't we, Morris?"
It wasn't a question. It was a kind of accusation.
"Well, when you say a lot," Morris began.
"And in fact, we got more money than we thought,"
said Peaches, still in the same tone of voice. It was very polite, but it just kept going, and it asked all the wrong questions. A wrong question for Morris was one that he didn't want anyone to ask. Peaches gave her little cough again.
"The reason I say we've got more money, Morris, is that you said gold coins were shiny like the moon, and silver coins were shiny like the sun, and you'd keep all the silver coins. In fact, Morris, that's the wrong way around. It's the silver coins that are shiny like the moon."
Morris thought a rude word in cat's language, which has a great many of them. What was the point of education, he thought, if people went out afterwards and used it?
"So we think, sir," said Dangerous Beans to Ham and Pork, "that after this one last time we should share out the money and go our separate ways. Besides, it's getting dangerous to keep repeating the same trick. We should stop before it's too late. There's a river here. We should be able to get to the sea. An island with no humans or cats would be a good place.
said Ham and Pork. Morris didn't let his smile fade, even though he knew what curlet meant.
"And we wouldn't want to keep Morris from his wonderful new job with the conjurer," said Peaches.
Morris's eyes narrowed. For a moment he came close to breaking his iron rule of not eating anyone that could talk.
"What about you, kid?" he said, looking up at the stupid-looking kid.
"I don't mind," said the kid.
"Don't mind what?" said Morris.
"Don't mind anything, really," said the kid, "just so long as no one stops me playing."
"But you've got to think of the future," said Morris.
"I am," said the kid. "I want to go on playing my flute in the future. It doesn't cost anything to play. But maybe the rats are right. We've had a couple of narrow squeaks, Morris."
Morris gave the kid a sharp look to see if he was making a joke, but the kid had never done that kind of thing before. He gave up. Well, not exactly gave up. Morris hadn't got where he was by giving up on problems. He just put them to one side. After all, something always turned up.
"Okay, fine," he said. "We'll do it one more time and split the money three ways. Fine, not a problem. But if this is going to be the last time, let's make it one to remember, eh?"
He grinned. The rats, being rats, were not keen on seeing a grinning cat, but they understood that a difficult decision had been made. They breathed tiny sighs of relief.
"Are you happy with that, kid?" said Morris.
"I can go on playing my flute afterwards," said the kid.
"Absolutely."
"Okay," said the kid.
The money, shiny like the sun and shiny like the moon, was solemnly put back in its bag. The rats dragged the bag under the bushes and buried it. No one could bury money like rats, and it didn't pay to take too much into towns. Then there was the horse. It was a valuable horse, and Morris was very, very sorry to turn it loose. But as Peaches pointed out, it was a highwayman's horse, with very ornate saddle and bridle. Trying to sell it here could be dangerous. People would talk. It might attract the attention of the government. This was no time to have the watch on their tails. Morris walked to the edge of the rock and looked down at the town, which was waking up under the sunrise.
"Let's make this the big one, then, eh?" he said as the rats came back. "I want to see maximum squeaking and making faces at people and whittling on stuff, okay?"
"We think that whittling on stuff is not really..." Dangerous Beans began, but... "Ahem," said Peaches, and so Dangerous Beans went on.
"Oh, I suppose if it's the last time..." "I've whittled on everything since I was out of the nest," said Ham and Pork. "Now they tell me it's not right. If that's what thinking means, I'm glad I don't do any." "Let's leave them amazed," said Morris. "Rats? They think they've seen rats in that town? After they've seen us, they'll be making up stories."